at La Trobe University. Bianca, good morning.
Good morning, Simon.
Thanks very much for joining us here on the daily program this morning. Now, Peter Dutton has made these multiple statements saying that, in his view, or seemingly alleging, indicating that he believes a lot of these allegations of abuse have reason to be falsified. We have asylum seekers, detainees would have reasons to falsify these kind of reports. But is this something that's particularly unusual in your view, or is this something that kind of reflects back on Australian society and Australian victims as well?
Absolutely. I think it really reflects, a history going back actually, hundreds of years of dismissing the claims of sexual assault victims. So, for example, we have, numerous statements from judges, both, from hundreds of years ago, but also in the past couple of decades, saying things like, it's dangerous to convict on the testimony of a sexual assault victim alone. Judges making comments like, oh, well, unfortunately, we know that sexual assault victims frequently lie. And, we also see those kinds of attitudes reflected in community attitudes and contemporary community attitudes to sexual assault victims. So there was some research coming out of Vic Health a year or two ago now showing that actually quite a large minority of the community agree with the statement that, victims of sexual assault will frequently lie.
Well, Peter Dutton, he is an ex-police officer. He mentioned that in one of the responses he's made to the Nauru Files, and he said it in the context of finding it offensive that anybody would allege, as an ex-police officer, he would not be taking these kinds of allegations in any way sort of lightly. And yet we mentioned this has kind of a history, in the judicial system. In your kind of view, false allegations, it kind of seems like it would be unfathomable for most people to lie about sexual abuse. But false allegations, how often do we see this kind of accusation come up?
Yeah, look, they're pretty rare. So we know, if we look at, for example, people who report to police, it's about the 2% mark that are deemed false reports. And that's on par to similar types of offences, so say your physical assaults and other offences against the person. So there's certainly no evidence to suggest that sexual assault victims lie or make false reports more than other victims of crime. But the other things that we need to consider here are, firstly, how are these complaints being deemed false? So some of the research looking at police decision-making, for example, tells us that police might label something false because the victim's withdrawn a complaint. It might be that the person is someone that is labelled as a kind of unreliable victim or witness. So, for example, sex workers or people with a history of mental illness or people who are otherwise known to police tend to have their complaints dismissed as being false. So false reports or something being labelled false doesn't always mean that it's actually false. There's also some research from the UK that sort of looked at things that actually were false, but what was going on, and it was very rare that people were actually making malicious reports against an identified alleged perpetrator. But usually they were women who were in quite difficult circumstances. So, for example, there was one woman who was going to be taken out of the country to have an arranged marriage take place, and she didn't want that to happen, so she made a rape allegation. But it was the kind of, strange dark man in an alleyway kind of thing. It wasn't against a named individual. So, this idea that there's kind of false malicious reports is, in reality, it's very, very rare. The other really important thing is that we know that the overwhelming majority of victims of sexual assault actually never tell anyone about their experience. So the bigger problem here is actually people not disclosing.
Well, you mentioned there attacks on the sex workers, attacks on the mentally disabled, and we often see this language in the reporting of sexual abuse, which is very, very much dehumanizing the actual victims themselves. Would you say that kind of line is particularly stark when talking about abuses against asylum seekers, because we've already seen them very much put away in these dark holes and dehumanized in most respects already?
Oh, absolutely. It absolutely contributes. One, towards how we view them when they make these complaints, but two, it actually increases their vulnerability in the first place. And I think that there is a reason why certain groups in the community, and that does include, for example, people with a disability, people with a history of mental illness, are particularly prone to being sexually assaulted and have much higher rates of sexual assault perpetrated against them. And the fact that they're so readily dismissed and discredited as victims is absolutely a part of that. And the fact that, we do so readily see them as being sort of dehumanized and othered and not part of our community, I think absolutely contributes towards that.
Now, in a letter from Save the Children in May 2016, the government was supposedly informed that through evidence gathered through data analysis, staff observations and other credible sources, the enclosed report on child asylum seekers in Nauru, this is all part of the letter, identifies significant and numerous child rights violations in the context. Yet we didn't see something coming out of this letter. We don't really see anything being reacted upon until there is something dramatic that is brought through the media instead, such as the Nauru file leaks. If we look at other examples, the Dondale Youth Detention Centre, we didn't see anything happening despite the fact the government was supposedly informed until there was this very dramatic Four Corners report that showed a great deal of videos and imagery that people could really latch onto. I guess with the Nauru sort of situation, despite the file leaks, we don't have the images, we don't have the human face to put on it quite yet. Is that perhaps why we haven't really seen as much of a reaction from either the government or the Australian people?
Oh, yeah, look, that's a really difficult question to answer. I mean, I think in terms of the Australian government, they're clearly very invested in offshore detention and seem to be very reluctant to admit that there's anything wrong with what's going on, despite the fact that there's some quite horrific human rights abuses happening there. So, look, I'm not surprised that the government hasn't responded in any particular way. Look, when it comes to the community, I'm not sure. I mean, I would like to think that it shouldn't take those kinds of graphic images for people to care about what happens to other human beings. I mean, the type of abuse that we're seeing, coming out of the Nauru files is absolutely horrific and really on its own should be enough to generate significant concern within the community. So you look again, whether it also relates back to this idea that asylum seekers are quite othered, they have been, I think, created as quite a suspicious class of people, at least within certain aspects of the community. You know, we hear these awful statements about them being queue jumpers or just wanting to come to a better country and all that kind of stuff. And I think some of those narratives really contribute again towards us as a collective, community sort of dismissing or not caring or not wanting to know. It is a difficult one to really know what's going on there.
Mm. Well, Bianca, it is obviously a very serious issue. Do appreciate your time coming on, having a chat with us about it this morning.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Bianca Felborn, a research fellow at La Trobe University, discussing with us the Nauru files leak, also in the wake of the Manus Island closure. It's worth remembering, too, as sort of Bianca sort of indicated, their asylum seeking, it's not illegal, and 98% of those held on Manus Island currently were found to be genuine asylum seekers rather than queue jumpers, rather than economic refugees, as some would allege. 98% were doing nothing illegal in seeking asylum in Australia, and yet this is the situation we're looking at right now. You are on the day.